Good morning. We'll call the House Revenue Committee meeting to order. Welcome everybody here. We're going to start without a quorum for the purpose of hearing only, but we have a quorum coming in the door right now. So,
Mr. Quorum?
Let's begin. Well, good morning, Representative Quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah. Good to be here.
Let's begin straight away with a public hearing on House Bill 2023, and welcome Tom Lynn-Harris. Madison, do you want to tell us what this is about before we bring Tom, why don't you come on up?
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2023 takes the issue of indexing for inflation for the personal property cancellation of tax and adjusts that provided in the law from 6 months of the current year to the 1 year back in order to make it more applicable and more workable for the assessors.
And we had a hearing on this.
We have also an amendment,
right.
-2 amendment.
Okay, I think that's why we continued that hearing for the purpose of bringing the amendment forward. The amendment.
And the amendment, in very simplified way, takes the ability of canceling or forgiving the penalties for a taxpayer if that taxpayer on the personal property is late for the first time, and this is the first time also that he's been assessed for that property.
I think the concern was that the way the proposal came in the first time, it looked like you could just kind of choose whatever year you wanted to be a delinquent, call that your first year, and then get the penalty. What the intent was that this is the first year filer, and so you have really kind of a notice issue legitimate ignorance and failure to file in those accounts. We were willing to grant that. And Tom, you're with us. Have you looked at these amendments? Do they seem to do what we intended to do?
Mr. Chair, Madison faxed me the amendments yesterday or the day before, and I've looked at them, and I think they accomplished the purpose that we talked about at the first hearing. So.
Okay. I'm sorry, for the record, Tom Lynn-Harris.
Tom Lynn-Harris, Columbia County Assessor, representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors.
Thank you very much. Now we know who you are. Okay, does anybody have any questions then about the these are the dash two amendments? And did we have any other amendments? We had dash one. I guess the dash twos replaced the dash ones. Okay, I'm always worried when we get up to more than one. I wonder what happened to the ones before. All right. Does anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2023 or the dash one amendment? I guess I don't see him, but J.L. Wilson was in. I think he was the one who brought this issue forward. Has he had an opportunity to review these? And do you know if...
I suspect he had. I haven't heard any feedback from him.
Oh, J.L. Wilson. Good timing. Come on up. Have you looked at the dash two amendments? Why don't you just take a minute there at the desk and look at the dash two amendments?
And the dash two still does not make fiscal impacts.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is precisely what we wanted to address, and it looks just fine with me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. J.L. Wilson, NFIB. doing all the witness introductions this morning. Okay, any questions then for either of our witnesses on the bill or the dash two amendments? Thank you. Then I will close the public hearing on House Bill 2023 and open a work session. We have the dash two amendments before us first.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I move that we adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2023.
Representative Virgin moves the dash two amendments into House Bill 2023. Is there any discussion on that motion? Any objection? Hearing none.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Bridger.
We move House Bill 2023 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Yeah, Representative Bridger moves House Bill 2023 to the floor with a due pass, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? Please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Quorum?
Farr.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
I will show Representative Williams and Representative Hobson excused. House Bill 2023 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a carrier?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you.
Okay, House Bill 2024. Let's move straight to that. Tom, is that another one of yours? So it appears, Masson, do you have anything to tell us about that? Let me open the public hearing on House Bill 2024.
Mr. Chair, the House Bill 2024 is also an assessor's bill, and in that it allows for the petitions that have been applied for the Board of Property Tax Appeal, if that petition has been agreed to between the owner and the assessor at the time of the meeting of the board, that it could be considered withdrawn rather than have to be stipulated in official record of the board.
Okay.
And in these senses, it doesn't have really any fiscal impacts or a revenue impact for either the state or the counties.
Tom Linhares.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, again, Tom Linhares, Columbia County Assessor, representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. This is a bill that the assessors have introduced or had introduced to simplify the way the Board of Property Tax Appeals works. And really what we're trying to accomplish is what we thought we had the authority to do all along, but Attorney General's opinion says otherwise. When appeals to the Board of Property Tax Appeals, the first local appeal level, the deadline for filing the appeals is December 31st. The board doesn't convene until, I can't remember exactly how it's worded, the first Monday after the first day of February or something. First part of February, anyway. So during the month of January, as we're reviewing the appeals and contacting the property owners, a lot of times we can look at the appeal and we can reach an agreement with the property owner that, yes, the value is too high and should be lowered. We thought we could enter into a stipulation with the property owner, file that with the board, and then proceed to correct the roll and get the property owner the refund. The Attorney General has come back with an opinion that says, no, every appeal needs a formal order by the board, and so even though we may agree with the property owner in early January, we need to wait until the first part of February at the earliest, and sometimes they don't meet until March or April, so that the board can take formal action so that we can reduce the value and get the property owner the refund. What this bill does is says if the assessor and the property owner enter into a written stipulation prior to the board convening, then that in effect results in a reduction of value. The board doesn't have to issue an order, it doesn't have to mail an order, doesn't have to take formal action. We can move promptly to reduce the value and get the property owner their refund.
All right, questions? Representative Berger.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, it occurs to me that by entering this into the record of your, and I've never done a tax appeal, property tax appeal, so I don't really, never sat before this board and talked about these things, but it seems to me that by having a record of those that have even been settled, if you could use that term, before they come to the board, it would give you a clear picture if you have a systemic problem that the same kind of appeal is coming before the board over and over again. Do you understand what I'm saying? Am I wrong in that? Is that...
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, no, you're not wrong. That can happen. The statutes as they're currently written and as they still would be written after 2024... would require that written stipulation be given to the board so they have a record of it.
Okay.
So if they've got, you know, five appeals, all five have been stipulated to, then they have a record of, yeah, maybe a certain neighborhood had been overvalued.
Exactly.
And so, you know, maybe there's a sixth appeal that for whatever reason the assessor and the taxpayer couldn't come to an agreement the board, as they were dealing with that six appeal, could say, well, gee, the assessor and five property owners agreed by stipulation. This six appeal has the same issues, and maybe we should treat it the same as the assessor and the property owners treated those first five. So you're right. That's why we have to give a copy of the written stipulation to the board.
I don't know what I'm doing there.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Hess.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if you could just comment on how 2024 and 2025 are linked. If they are, would that make this easier to understand? Or?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hess, they're linked quite a bit. In fact, it was our intention initially when these were submitted to Legislative Council that they be included in one bill, and Legislative Council, in their infinite wisdom, put them in separate bills. But 2025 deals with the process prior to December 31st.
Tell you what, Tom, with that, let me just kind of open the... Oh, Kathy, you're away from the... Sorry. Hang on a second. I'll open a hearing on 2025. We can kind of wrap the conversation about both of them in together. Then that's easiest. Kathy's distributing a letter from the Yamhill County Clerk that deals with both of them. So that's a good question. Let's tie them in together. We can kind of put them both in the same conversation since they are related. Okay. Kathy will open a hearing, public hearing on House Bill 2025. And Tom, if you want to just continue, you can tie these two together.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back in 1997, when we implemented Measure 50 and we had this massive bill, one of the things we tried to do in Measure 50 was to simplify the system. And one of the things we did was to say that once tax bills are sent out, and before December 31st, which is the deadline for filing appeals with the Board of Property Tax Appeals, if the assessor discovers that a value is too high, that they can lower that value on their own. Prior to that, a taxpayer would come in late October, say, I think my value is too high. The assessor would look at it and say, yeah, we really screwed that one up. It is too high. And the property owner would say, okay, so you'll lower the value and give me a refund. And the assessor would say, no, here's a piece of paper. You've got to file it with the Board of Property Tax Appeals, and they may get around to it in March or April. Well, what we did in 97 was say the assessor could reduce the value at that time if an appeal to the Board of Property Tax Appeals wasn't filed. So the owner would come in October, November. We'd say, yeah, the value's too high. You know, we agree to reduce it. But then we'd have to wait till after December 31st to find out whether or not they filed an appeal. What 2025 says is basically just takes that language out that says that no petition to the Board of Property Tax Appeals has been filed. So that in October, November, if we agree, we can go ahead and reduce it. Chances are it's going to be before November 15th. We can get the taxes recalculated before the taxes are even due. Or if it's after November 15th, again, we can get them their refund that much sooner. We end up sitting on a stack of accounts this high that we've agreed to reduce, but we have to wait till after December 31st to find out if they filed an appeal or not. Now, one or two of those do file an appeals. The value is $200,000. We agree it should only be $175,000. They think it should be $150,000. So this, you know, could result in a little duplication. But that's the exception. Most property owners, once they talk to the assessor and they agree, then that's the end of the story. But we always have to wait. So what 2025 does is take out that language so that we can go ahead and reduce the value immediately and get them their refund. So 2025 deals with the period of time before December 31st, and 2024 really deals with a period of time once an appeal is filed, but the assessor and the property owner agree and stipulate in writing before the board convenes.
And in both cases, what we're doing is streamlining the process for the benefit of the assessor, so we're reducing workload there and for the benefit of the taxpayer.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
To save the effort of the appeal and then the process that they're put to now just to get an agreed-upon reduction in value and refund.
That's certainly our intention. Does that answer your question, Representative Hess?
Yeah, thanks.
And I haven't read the letter from the Amnil County Clerk.
It's in support.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You're okay.
I thought the county clerks were in support of it.
Yeah. Okay, are there other questions on either House Bill 2024 or House Bill 2025? Anybody need any more information? Does anybody else wish to testify on either of those bills? Okay, let me close the hearing on both of the bills then, 2024 and 2025, and open a work session on House Bill 2024.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Hess.
I move we accept House Bill 2024 and send it to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hess moves House Bill 2024 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative
Barnhart? Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Carr?
Aye.
Hess?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. House Bill 2024 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Scott, you were looking to carry the last one. Do you want to carry this one? Good taxpayer-friendly bill. And let's open a work session on House Bill 2025. Representative Hess.
I move House Bill 2025 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Hess moves House Bill 2025 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on that motion? Please call please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart? Aye. Berger? Aye. Barr? Aye. Hess? Aye. Scott?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
House Bill 2025 goes to the floor with the due pass. Representative Hess, do you want to carry those?
Sure.
All right. While I remember it and before I forget it, let me request the unanimous consent to return to the work session on House Bill 2023 for the purpose of allowing Representative Williams to vote. Is there any objection to that? All right, we're back in work session on House Bill 2023. Representative Williams, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Good, good guess.
I was just checking.
I'm always tempted to set someone up like that. Record one aye vote for the bill. Okay, let's go to a public hearing on House Bill 2026. Madden, do you want to give us the introduction on that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the House Bill 2026 is also an assessor's bill and is probably the last of the ones pre-filed. And in trying to simplify, it gives the water associations that have an exemption, it eliminates the requirement to apply every year for that exemption as long as ownership and property have not changed for that association. And since they already get the exemption and it's just a matter of how they file for it, it doesn't have any revenue impact to it.
Let's see. Tom Lynn-Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Tom Lynn-Harris, Columbia County Assessor, representing the Oregon State Association of County Assessors. If you love the first two bills, you're going to love this one. Small water associations, nonprofit water associations, and these are typically out in the rural areas away from cities where maybe they develop a street with four or five houses on it, and they dig a single well that serves all five houses. They form a nonprofit association to own and operate this small water system. Those are exempt from property taxes. But the current statute requires them to file every year. So every year we have to dig out the application form, send them out. We usually get a couple of them back because the secretary of the association has changed from, John Smith to, Bill Brown, or they just don't get around to it. It's a lot of paperwork for both the assessor and the property owners. Typically, these are just some pumps, some piping, you know, maybe a shed over the pump to make sure it doesn't freeze, and they typically don't change. Or if they do change, they take out the old pump and put in the new pump. So what this bill simply says is, like most other exemptions, that once they file, if the use of the property or the ownership of the property doesn't change, they don't have to file every year, saving some paperwork.
Okay, questions about that? Seems pretty straightforward. All right, no questions? Anybody else wish to testify on House Bill 2026? All right, then with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2026 and open a work session on House Bill 2026. Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, I move that House Bill 2026 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Berger moves House Bill 2026 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Farr.
Aye.
Aye.
Scott? Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2026 goes to the floor with a due pass. Anybody want to be a hero to all the nonprofit?
I'll do it.
Okay, Representative Berger. You'll get in their newsletter if they have one.
Relax. Thanks.
Hey, House Bill 2197. Let's go back to that, folks. This is the timber tax bill. We have a new amendment before us today, and let's see if we're ready on this one. I'll open a work session on House Bill 2197. Kathy, you have the new amendment? Okay, it's coming to you. Dick, you want to bring us up to speed and remind us of the amendments we have before us?
Mr. Chair, members of Yates, Legislative Revenue. House Bill 2197 proposes a new program for small woodlot owners, a method of taxing forest land, which involves assessing the forest land at 20% of the value it would otherwise have as forest land, and imposing at the time of harvest a tax on the volume of harvest measured in 1,000 board feet. The bill does essentially is continue the existing program, which involves property tax at 20% of forest land value and a privilege tax, which is actually measured or assessed against the value of the timber which is harvested. That program is being phased out under current law. This would continue it for one more year to allow the new program to sort of begin without people being forced into the 100% program and then having to come back into the new program. So that's what the bill does, essentially. It's a long bill, and it has a lot of conforming amendments, but it basically continues the 80-20 program for one year and then institutes a new forest tax program. We have three amendments to the bill. The Dash 1 amendments deal with a first issue, which relates to the continuation of the existing program. For the existing program, the department has to go out and estimate the value of each species of timber that's harvested. There is an alternative which exists now for small owners, and that is to use the net value, and I'm forgetting the terminology here. Let's see if I can find the amendment. Net reproductive. Anyway, it's the value at the mill essentially adjusted for the cost of getting the timber to the mill. And what the amendment does is to allow essentially all people that are eligible for this small program, which means anyone with less than 5,000 acres of forest land, to use that method of determining the value of the timber that's harvested. And now that I've got the amendment, I can refer to the net stumpage recovery value, which I couldn't remember. So it extends that essentially It eliminates the 500,000 board foot limit on the harvest in both eastern and western Oregon, and increases the ownership from 1,000 to 5,000 acres in western Oregon, allowing them to use that alternative measure, alternative way of measuring the value of wood harvested. The second amendment in the dash, on page one of the dash one amendments, line three, you see a change from 2006 to 2005. That's the time at which the indexing of the harvest tax rate begins. If you remember, section 6, I think it is in the bill, sets the rates initially at $3.89 in western Oregon, $3.03 in eastern Oregon. Those rates are indexed, and in the bill that indexing begins in 2006, which would leave 1 year where that rate continued at the initial rate. The intent was for it to begin indexing initially, immediately, essentially, and that would, this amendment would change it to begin that indexing immediately. That's all that's in the dash one amendments. The dash two amendments, if you remember, I raised the question of the base of the index, whether or not it's all forest land in either western or eastern Oregon, or just forest land that's in the small tract option program that's used as the basis for computing the index. And the amendment changes it so you only look at the value of forest land in the small tract program. So you're not averaging property which is on at 20% with property which is on at 100%. The new amendment, which you have, the dash three amendments now, there was discussion in committee about, what I call gaming the system. And what this does is to go into Section 4, which deals with the qualifications to enter into this program. The first three there deal with ownerships. It has to be at least 10 acres, not more than 5,000. The land has to be all forest land within a tax lot or within a contiguous parcel. And it has to meet the minimum stocking and specie requirements. This adds one more requirement to be eligible to enter the program, and that is that the land that is subject to the application to be small tract forest land, must not have been disqualified from the small tract forest land assessment under Sections 1 to 14 of this Act in any of the prior 5 years. So if a person decided to, was in the program, wanted to opt out of the program in the year before a major harvest, they would then be in the 100% program for 5 years.
In addition, they would have paid a penalty.
That's correct.
Upon withdrawing from the program.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. That was a quick turnaround, too, from Legislative Council on the Dash 3 amendments. You know, we probably won't know for another 10 years or more if this is the right fix, but I think at least what we're sending in this is that we're our intention is to not facilitate somebody whose efforts might be to game the system, as you say.
Yes.
We'll be looking at this again in 2009. That's actually a directive of the department to come back with a review of this in 2009. To the extent that there's any history, we can look at that point, or our successors can look at that point to determine if this is, you know, working. And it may be that we just have to wait for a while, even after that, to see. But I think this at least sends the message that we want to make sure that, you know, that we're not creating an opportunity here for folks just to get in and out willy-nilly, but we're actually creating some barrier and some disincentive to that kind of revolving door. Yeah, Representative Pence.
Thank you. Dick, could you just remind me on a very basic question about this, about how these rates and values are agreed to or arrived upon?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hess, the working group struggled with that question for a long time and asked me essentially to try and model what rate would be revenue neutral over a rotation. And so basically for the best forest land, you're talking about 55 years. For the poorest or least productive forest land, you're talking about a rotation age of 100 years, the time it takes to grow a tree from the time it's planted until it's ready to harvest. And so I tried to model it based on a number of assumptions about behavior in terms of how the forest land is managed, whether it's managed for sustained yield or whether it's clear-cut operations and a number of alternatives in between. And the idea and the goal of that modeling was to come up with a rate which was, in fact, revenue neutral. And to sort of respond maybe a little bit more than you're asking for, the question of those rates is, you know, there's no answer to that. I've made a guess, and I guess I could call it an educated guess about what will be revenue-neutral rates, but it's all based on my assumptions about how people are going to behave, and those are very hard things to estimate. There's a lot of non-economic criteria involved in how these owners are going to choose to enter or stay out of this program. And that's another reason for looking again in 2009. The objective and the intent, I think, is that's brought to us is that they not get a tax break or not have an excess tax burden relative to people in the large owner program. And what the department will be able to look at, I think, if we can encourage them to collect enough data, is what property tax was actually deferred and what harvest tax was paid and whether there is a reasonable balance between those two, which is the goal. And so in 2009, again, the question would be, well, did we set the rate too high or too low to achieve that goal?
And it's a good question, and for the record, the answer, too, that the intent of this be revenue neutrality so that if there's an adjustment necessary in 2009, that would be the basis on which to make the adjustment. Certainly under the previous privilege tax that we had in effect as a tax, it was too high. I mean, it was collecting more than the anticipated amount, and that led to some of the momentum for the change in the first place that caused this. But for the record, it's good to note that be the intent, that this be revenue neutral on forest land owners, and that be the basis of any adjustments that we might be looking at in 2009. All right. Any other questions? Just for the record, and a nod of the head would be sufficient, but Christina McNitt and Wally Rutledge, are indicating, and Norm Miller from Department of Revenue, okay, are indicating approval of the -3 amendments. I think you are anticipating my question. Okay. I appreciate that and also appreciate your work over these past 4-plus years to get us to this point. Colleagues, you'll see a fiscal impact on this, but I double-checked with Paul. This is anticipated in the governor's budget. There is no subsequent referral to Ways and Means, so we can send this to the floor without a detour to the Ways and Means Committee. And frankly, it's a must-have bill. Without this, then all of these landowners simply go on to the industrial lands tax system, which never was the intent. So I think everyone's expectation is that this bill will happen, and it has been anticipated in the governor's budget. And you'll see that it's actually filed at the governor's request for the state forestry department. So with that, are there any other questions or comments about the bill?
Chair?
Yeah, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Your last comment, I'd just like to amplify it just a little bit and basically say, as I understand this bill, the attempt of it is to reduce the incentive to cut timber prematurely in order to pay property tax, and at the same time make sure that over the harvest cycle, the 55 or 100 year harvest cycle, we actually get our cut in the either property taxes or in the severance tax, and makes sense to me.
Thank you, and I appreciate that comment. I think you brought that question up or comment up on Monday about this actually facilitating good management and not putting landowners in a position of cutting early because of some property tax burden. I think it's a worthwhile aspect of the bill to remark on. Anything else? Okay, we have the -1s, 2s, and 3s before us, and we are in work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative, well, we'll go with Williams.
I move the adoption of the -1 amendments.
Representative Williams moves the -1 amendments into House Bill 2197. Is there any objection? Any discussion? Any objection? None so ordered. Representative Verger?
Mr. Chairman, I move the -2 amendments.
Representative Verger moves the -2 amendments into House Bill 2197. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered, and we have the dash threes. Representative Barnhart, I think you were going to speak up, weren't you?
Oh, yes, yes, okay. Sir. Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendment.
All right. Representative Barnhart moves the dash. This is a real committee effort here. Moves the dash three amendments to House Bill 2197. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none. Representative Farr, I think you were going to speak up next.
I was. I move the bill be taken to the House floor with a due pass. Recommendation.
All right. Representative Farr moves House Bill 2197 as amended with the dash ones, twos, and threes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion before we go to the vote? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative
Barnhart?
Aye.
Berger?
Aye.
Farr?
Aye.
Pass?
Aye.
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 Williams?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2197 goes to the floor with a due pass. Representative Verger and I will co-carry the bill. Appreciate that, folks. This is our first big bill of the session, but not only of this session, but it's essentially a big bill of the last three sessions for all intents and purposes. So glad to get it out and on its way. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2197. Then we just have a couple of things on committee bill introduction before we wrap up today. First, Representative Verger and I have a little skit we would like to perform for you. Representative Verger.
Mr. Chair, yes. I move we reconsider the vote by which LC 2040 was introduced as a committee bill at the request of the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Industries.
Vice Chair Verger moves that we reconsider the vote by which LC 2040 was introduced as a committee bill at the request of the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Industries. Then it says discussion. First of all, that was supposed to have been Association of Oregon Counties in the script on Monday, and it was I just didn't catch that. But secondly, I guess as it develops, it's not Association of Oregon Counties at all. It will be limited to introduction at the request of League of Oregon Cities and only League of Oregon Cities. And so we needed to make that clear when the bill goes forward. And I apologize to anybody who was misled by our little mistake on Monday. So is there any further discussion on that motion? Those of the opinion that we reconsider the vote, this is just the vote to reconsider, by which LC 2040 was introduced as a committee bill at the request of the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Industries. I don't think we need to really call a roll on that. Is there any objection to that motion? Okay. Then we have the bill back, the LC back in front of us, and so the chair would move introduction of LC 2040 as a committee bill at the request of the League of Oregon Cities. Is there any objection to that? All right. Thank you very much. Then we have before us also LC 353 relating to pollution control tax credit, LC 217. That one comes to us at the request of Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Metals Industry Council, Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and Oregon Seed Council. Then we have LC 2117. Paul, this is our ESD.
2117 is the clarification.
The revenue of Senate Bill 1022. That's right. This has to do with the shift.
Right. Accrual of revenues in July.
Yeah, state
collections.
This is a cleanup from the special session relating to the payment shift to schools in May. Mm-hmm. It's a committee bill. LC 2376 is another committee bill. This relates to the local option bill, that the measure that we introduced earlier as a committee bill. Looks like the election bill. Mm-hmm. And then LC 2338, special education. Okay, that comes as a committee bill as well, without not as a request of anyone in particular. So With that, the chair would move the introduction, again, the usual, the introduction of these bills does not connote any kind of support by anybody on this committee or the committee itself for any of these bills. They're just getting into the process. So the chair would move LC 353 be introduced as a committee bill at the request of Associated Oregon Industries, Oregon Metals Industry Council, Oregon Farm Bureau, Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and Oregon Seed Council, and introduction of LC 217 as a committee bill, LC 2376 as a committee bill, and LC 2338 as a committee bill. Is there any discussion on any of those?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
2117 is the fix bill.
That's right.
Okay. Yes. It's on the table then.
It's on the table.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Any other discussion? Then we have the motion before us on all of the bills being introduced. Read in the motion. Any objection? Hearing none, those bills are in. And with that, folks, well, that's a lot of bills in 45 minutes. Good work. All right. Out of the showers.
We have.